This is Pat. Hey, you want to stick around for today's program? Pat, are we answering the number one asked question?
No, we're answering the number two asked question. The number two asked question is, should I invest my money or pay off my mortgage? The number one asked question always is, how much money do I need to retire?
Okay, but, which is also important. But we're going to talk, we're going to take a bunch of calls this program, but we're also going to talk about whether it makes sense to pay off the mortgage or should you take the money and invest elsewhere. So stick around for Hanson McLean, Money Matters.
Providing guidance as you plan and transition into retirement for over two decades, here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us on this Saturday, post-inauguration Saturday, I might add.
Yes.
Both myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. Spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. Glad to be doing it.
Yeah.
And
long time. We've been doing this show for
a long time. So
long
whether
time.
You're a new listener or a loyal long-term listener, we're glad you are here with us. And
even if you listen on podcasts, we've got
that. So here's with Trump now president and the new administration, we're all watching to wonder what's going to change. They're going to happen.
And everyone in business is thinking, how's this going to affect me and my industry?
Of course, yes.
Everyone.
Every industry. Yeah. Well,
every
is this going to be good for me? Is it going to be bad for me?
Yeah.
Et cetera. And and as far as the financial services industry, and we talked about this quite a bit last year, but it's this whole fiduciary standard that the Department of Labor, this came through the Department of Labor.
Which was a strange thing to begin with, how the Department of Labor actually was extending their reach of their purview of
Oversight. Regulatory oversight.
Correct.
To any retirement account. Now, so whether it had to do with your 401k, which is acquired through work, through your labor.
Which is where they used to live.
Yes, but also on IRAs, individual retirement accounts. And so the standard, this fiduciary standard that's set to go into place mid-April, states that your advisor, your financial advisor, must act in your best interest when it comes to your retirement accounts. Do you think, well,
what you, every one of you has to be shaking your head saying, what do you mean? Aren't they supposed to now?
No,
they are not.
Unless they're a registered investment advisor, a firm like Hanson McLean that already is a fiduciary, the firms only have to do what they believe is suitable, not necessarily what's in your best interest.
Which means it doesn't least expensive.
As long as it's in your interest somewhat, it's fine.
That's probably what they say. That's probably the best way to describe suitability.
It still has to be in your interest.
It's probably not going to hurt you.
It won't hurt you, yes. That's probably the way. Just don't harm the people, yeah. So we've all been watching this. So the question now is, and some people in the industry are saying, if with the new administration, are they going to unwind this? Personally, I love the fiduciary concept. We've been fiduciaries for 20 years. I would like to see the Securities and Exchange Commission to be the one pushing this across all investments, not just the retirement account.
Yes.
So there's actually some in favor of fiduciary that's not really in favor of the Department of Labor pushing. But anyway, that's one of the things we will be watching. We will, of course, let you know in the program as we start.
And if you think, how's this affect me?
It will.
It will affect you because this fiduciary standard, if you have money in an IRA, if they put this in place, it will stop your advisor from trying to promote things that aren't in your best interest.
Yes, garbage products.
Garbage
products. We've already seen declines of non-traded real estate investment trusts.
Oh, yes.
I think we'll see declines of non-traded
index
REITs.
Indexed annuities have been hit by this as well.
BDCs and some other things that aren't always in clients' best interest. So anyway, it's kind of interesting. We find it interesting, and we hope you will as well. But if you have an advisor now, make sure that they are acting in your best interest. If they're a registered investment advisor, they, by law, have to act in your best interest. If they are just a broker, they don't have to act in your best interest. Legally, they don't have to. So, anyway, let's take some calls. If you want to join Hanson McLean, we'd love to take your call on anything financial. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. We're going to start off by talking with Bernice in Georgia. Bernice, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes. My name is Bernice, and I am will be 69 in February.
Okay.
I retired in 2014. And in another year, I would need to take a distribution from my IRA.
Mm-hmm.
I have some savings, and I have a Roth IRA, and I have a traditional IRA.
And how much do you have in your traditional IRA?
About $500,000.
And are you taking any income from that today to help supplement your...
No, I don't need to. I have Social Security, and I have a pension, and I haven't taken any from any of my investments.
Okay, let's,
because I don't need to.
Well, let's ask a couple of questions to see if you're a candidate now for a conversion from an IRA to a Roth IRA.
For just some portion, so before you get started.
Yeah. So what's your approximate income for between the pension and the Social Security?
About $50,000 a year.
And are you married?
No.
And any dependents?
No.
Yeah, I don't think it makes sense. She's not only that, she's got a required minimum distribution.
Yeah.
Beginning
and I wanted next
year.
My question was, what would be the best? Do I start taking some now, or just wait until it's time to
take
out?
It's really, the challenge is it's not going to make any difference. I mean, unless we see some major overhaul in the tax code in 2017, which mm-hmm. I suppose is possible. You're at a point now where,
you know, Scott, I'm gonna disagree with you. How much money do you have in your regular Roth?
I have $100,000 in my regular Roth.
And wow. How much do you have in savings?
A lot.
I have about $200,000 in savings.
And do you owe anyone money?
I still have a mortgage on my home.
How big?
$14,000.
You owe $14,000 on the mortgage.
Yes.
Why haven't you paid that off?
Because of the tax, I still itemize my taxes, and that helps me with my itemization.
And you give some money to charity that helps you with the itemization as well.
Yes, I do. I give quite a bit to charity.
Yeah, that's I knew that. Just from figuring out why you were itemizing.
Why you were itemizing, yeah.
What's the interest rate on that mortgage?
5%.
It doesn't make any difference if she pays it off, does it?
You know, well, let's stop for a minute. You know what? How much do you give to charity every year, approximately?
Approximately $6,000.
So we should actually, when the RMD kicks in, you should actually have those dollars go to the charity, the $6,000.
Yes.
Okay.
And then start a monthly distribution.
To Pat's point, you can have money go directly from the required minimum distribution. You can have it go directly from the IRA to your charity.
Okay.
And it lowers the taxable income.
Yes.
And I'd pay that house off tomorrow.
So paying off the $14,000.
Yeah. You have some money. How much money do you have in the bank, like in a savings account, like down at the local bank?
Oh, about $7,000 that I keep for house maintenance.
She has a couple hundred thousand. It doesn't make any difference whether you pay it off, Pat.
Yeah, It doesn't matter. Here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to start spending some of this money. That's what I'd like you to do. If you were my mother, or you'd be too young to be my mother. If you were my sister.
That's when you know you've been doing this a long time.
I know. When you can't use that anymore. If you were my sister, I would say, hey, Bernice, what are you doing? Enjoy this. You've worked your whole life for it. You're going to have to change your behavior a little bit. Go buy your.
I travel.
Okay. So, no, you know what, though? Here's another way to look at it. So you give $6,000 a year to charity, which is quite a bit, more than 10% of your income. You've got a lot of assets. You could say the required minimum distribution is going to be at about 3.5%. It's going to kick in next year.
Yeah, so you're going to have
one
to
thing
think
you
in
could,
about 17, 18,
one thing
000.
You could say is, you know, you don't have to do this every year, but you could say, maybe I'll see if there's some charities that I can really get involved in and have these go to one or two or three charities, whatever it is. And take the required minimum distributions and just use them for those charitable purposes.
She could do that, or a combination of the two.
Yeah, or a combination of the two.
So if you were sitting in my office, I'd say, Bernice, why don't we start a monthly income of $1,000 a month when this required minimum distribution, and all the rest of it will go to charity.
Okay.
And that way, it's good for your taxes. It's going to lower your taxable event, what you're going to pay in taxes because of the RMD is going directly to the charity. And then spend the rest. Just spend it. Go out to dinner more or travel more or buy.
Well, you don't have to spend it if she doesn't want to spend it.
No, correct.
All right. No, I do have, I don't have children of my own, but I do have a lot of nieces and nephews, and some of them are in school. And I am helping them, the ones
that's
that
wonderful.
Are in school.
Yeah.
So my main thing was, what would be the best way when I do have to take a R&D, what would be the best way to do it?
Having some go directly to charity, it bypasses the tax return entirely, doesn't become a taxable event.
But it lowers the amount that you're going to have to pay taxes on.
If the simplest thing is, we would say, Bernice, what you do is you just take the required minimum distribution, have it set up each year. It gets transferred from your IRA to your other account. Let's assume you have some brokerage account or an account tied to that. And then the tax, you have tax withheld, it gets sent to the tax man, and just have it set from one account to the next. That's the simplest way.
But because you're actually funding these charities now, you'd say, I'm going to give $6,000. What'd you say? You give approximately $6,000 a year to charities. I got $6,000 actually going to the charities, and I got another $1,000 a month coming to me. And I'm going to withhold 25% taxes on it, some state, some federal, and I'm going to call it a day. And then I'm going to spend it. When it gets to my house, I'm going to spend it.
Okay.
Or help your nieces and nephews.
Yeah, nieces or nephew. You'll be the best aunt in the world.
But it should go directly to the charity, not when
that
I take it out.
Correct.
Go straight to the charity and not come to me.
Correct. And the IRA custodian or your financial advisor.
And her tax, it may not make any difference. Whether it flows through the top line and then comes out as an itemized deduction or not. Because she doesn't have to deal with any personal exemptions getting reduced, doesn't have any itemized exemption reductions. You're looking at me like, I think you're right, aren't you, right, Pat?
No, I'm thinking, yeah, that's true, but it might be easier to have it come from the IRA to
just
the charity.
Just a good discipline.
It's just easier.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it doesn't touch my hands.
Yeah, yeah. It's easier. If you're giving to the same charity. Are you giving to one or two charities every year? How many charities?
Well, most of the church.
There you go. Easy. So just have $6,000 go to, and then the rest come to you on a monthly basis, withhold 25% in taxes, spend it on the nieces and nephews, and enjoy life. Scott?
Yep, I agree.
How are you going to argue with that? That's great advice.
How are you going to argue with that?
I like that idea.
Thank you, Bernice.
Thanks, Bernice. Keep up the great work. You are a great. You're a great saver. You're a good saver.
And yeah. I didn't make a whole lot of money when I was working, but I made enough to save.
Yeah, you're a good saver. Well,
no one makes enough to save. I'll have a discipline to save.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
So you worked hard to save.
We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bernice. Bye. You know, I got to tell you, she was just as sweet as can be.
She is.
Yeah. I just think the world would be nice to have more people like Bernice.
Yeah, yeah, and generous.
Extremely generous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Generous. So.
Again, to join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's talk with Bill in El Dorado Hills, California. Bill, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello, Pat and Scott. How are you today?
Fantastic.
Great. I have a question that's a bit of an oddball question for you, but I'm hoping you might be able to give me an answer. I'm advising my daughter, and my daughter is...
Good luck with that. Right there.
We're out. We're out.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Well, she happens to be a successful entrepreneur.
Oh, great. Well, that changes everything.
For full disclosure during the show, I have my cell phone here, and I saw a text. It was from my daughter asking about a jacket. Can she buy and put on my credit card?
So, oh, is that right?
It's very
right
nice.
In the middle.
Right. Yeah.
Actually, my daughter has been home over the holidays. She was home. It was nice spending time with her. Anyway, that's enough about us, Bill. You're the one that had the question.
All right. Here's the question. They're still a startup, but they've been around for about 7 years. I won't mention the name of the company, but. After this last round of financing that they received, her stock holding in the company, and she is CEO, is worth north of $20 million.
Okay.
And the company has a D&O policy, directors and officers insurance coverage, of $1 million. She has an umbrella policy on her own through her renter's policy company, and that's $5 million. Question is... Does she need more D&O insurance?
Are they is her umbrella? Are they aware of her occupation and whatnot?
Yes. Okay. And when we set that up, which was just last week, it will cover her personally, but it will not cover her and her actions as officer of the company.
Yeah. So,
which begs the question: did the company have D&O? And yes, they do, but the limitation is $1 million.
And how much of the company, as a percentage, is she control own?
Oh,
probably small.
Pretty small.
More than 20%.
Oh.
So you
okay.
It's out there. There's some liability out there. If I were in her situation.
Mm-hmm.
Why
didn't she increase the directors and D&O?
They just have the company mark.
That's why I'm calling.
Oh, correct. Oh, calling. Oh, my gosh, yes.
If she increases that, how much by how much should she increase it?
Oh, I mean,
got $1 million down.
If it were me,
I would talk to an insurance specialist, someone who specializes in this sort of thing.
Yeah, D&O.
Okay.
D&O, and I'll have that conversation with them.
That's correct, because there's a formula that they're going to run through.
Yep.
But for me, I would be scared if my D&O was only $1 million in this situation.
Well, that's why I'm calling. I was scared, too, when I saw it's only
$1 million.
Especially before recently, her stock wasn't worth what it is today.
Yeah.
But again, it's stock in a startup company. Yeah. So unless the company is acquired or
someone just thinks her share is worth $20 million because they just put another round in valuing it at that.
Well, exactly, and that's the basis. I say that's worth north of $1 million, more than 20.
Yes.
Just based on the valuation of the investors who put money in the
company. So for the rest of the listeners,
DC companies.
For the rest of the listeners, we'll actually explain what this conversation was about. His daughter, Bill's daughter, is the CEO of a company and probably has a board seat possibly as well on.
Probably chairman.
Of the board.
Chairwoman, excuse me.
And this company is worth some money. The D&O, which is directors and officers insurance, actually is a policy where the insurance would pay if there was some
lawsuit
against her, which if something goes wrong,
they blame the CEO.
They blame the CEO. And if something goes wrong, and many things can go wrong, the best laid plans of mice and men, many things can go wrong. I agree with Scott. If it were me, I'd probably try to buy $10 million at least.
Yeah.
A D&O.
Yeah.
If it were me.
But I talked to someone who's an expert in this area.
Correct.
Like you said, Pat, there's some sort of formula on it.
There's a formula. But if it were me, if I was sitting there, I'd say, well, just right before, increase it to $10 million right now, and then we'll go and shop it and see what the correct amount is. And it's not that expensive.
More expensive than umbrella insurance.
Yeah, obviously. Correct. It's more expensive than umbrella insurance. But what a great dad.
The umbrella policy was inexpensive.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, Bill, are you still working, by the way?
No.
And what did you do when you were working?
I had my own company.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was an importer and a distributor of outdoor clothing products.
Okay.
Oh, really? Oh,
so
cool.
You understood. The reason I asked that question is because this is a pretty nuanced question.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah.
And there had to be something
in your... A lot of fathers wouldn't know it.
Yeah, there had to be something in your background that actually alerted you to this risk.
Yes.
Which is nice.
I'm a businessman by background. I'm also a professional by background, both a lawyer and CPA.
Oh, so that makes sense. There we go.
We've not been practicing law. The answer to this question was not practicing law.
Yes, because Bill is a lawyer, and we'll get a bill from Bill.
No.
What a great mentor your daughter has in you.
No, thank you very much.
Truly, what a great mentor. And I hope she takes advantage of that.
Yeah.
Oh, she does. But she has far surpassed her old man in terms of business acumen and ability. I'll tell you, she's a very sharp girl.
Yeah, but it's so important in business that you can have someone that you can talk to outside of the business that you actually have confidence in. And I think that's probably a great...
Actually, this brings up another question, too, and I just asked this. Is this the type of client that would Hanson McLean would be interested in talking
with $20 million?
No,
absolutely. No. That's so we have clients. It's funny because we have clients from, you know, small, they're younger, they're just starting to multi-million. And so we try to do is match the client with the appropriate advisor for what the need is. And that's probably the biggest key. And we have a fairly large stable of advisors. And that's really where it actually gets, it works is she needs someone that is actually very, very experienced.
And if it's not us, it needs to be a firm that is my opinion is it needs to be an independent registered investment advisory firm, one that takes a fiduciary approach that does not sell financial product.
Yeah. So anyway,
right.
Appreciate the call and send her in. Sure.
I'd love to I will indeed.
Thanks, Bill.
Oh, thanks,
gentlemen.
Bill.
Thank you very much for your help on this. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And you know, Pat, you know, I finished up that comment on having an independent fiduciary. And here's why. I have an acquaintance of mine, CEO of a company. And years ago, he asked me, hey, Scott, what do you think of this so-and-so advisor? Do you know who he is? And the advisor was at one of the large brokerage firms. And actually, I didn't know who the guy was. I said, I don't know him personally. He has a good reputation. I've heard some good things about him, but I don't know him. And I said to him, I said, but if you use him, I said, just don't invest in any products that firm manufactures. Just make sure you don't invest in anything that they manufacture. And the reason I said that is not that they manufacture bad products. It's just that the advisor is not, he or she will not receive unbiased advice and recommendations regarding that, right? So, for example, our research department, we go and research a variety of different type of investments. Because we're not producing
something.
We're
not beholden to a company. We're not working for the very big corporation that requires or highly encourages us to sell their manufactured
product. What happened? This is before the financial crisis. This individual was recommended by his advisor, the advisor I'd vouched for, but I said, don't invest in anything that the company produces. And it was supposedly some sort of money market alternative, like safe alternative. It was all this synthetic product built in there.
Okay, so I'm going to guess how it ended.
When the financial crisis hit, the Black Swan event hit, the thing fell 86-87% in value.
So it was like a money market, except it didn't.
Except it wasn't.
It was like a money market, except it didn't actually have the ability to hold its value.
Well, I found out about this. I thought, man, I said, did you forget? Either you forgot what I'd said, or you discounted it.
Or the advisor sold past it.
Or the advisor sold past it. But my point is, the advisor maybe is a great advisor. The challenge is that advisor was not able with clear vision to look at this product objectively, because he was had heard about it through the lines of management in the big company, and who knows if there were some financial incentives.
So that's
not saying they're all bad, but that's the problem.
But now I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Why would you want to advocate for the devil?
Well, that's
seriously.
Okay.
When you think about that line,
okay.
I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Okay. All right.
That's going to destroy.
No one's ever said that.
Think about it. Okay. I'm going to join ISIS.
Okay. So counter that. Regardless of the firm you hire, you need to do some background check on the individual advisor in the firm. Because just going to an independent doesn't make it okay.
Absolutely. Yes, there's some horrible independents out there.
Just because they're independent doesn't make it okay.
Google broker check.
Yeah. Or go to our website and watch the webinar.
Yeah, we have a webinar on
how to choose an advisor.
Something along those lines.
How to choose an advisor. Yeah. So, and that's at moneymatters.com. Moneymatters.com. So
that's right.
So there you go. Regardless of who you hire, do a background check on them. Someone came into our office a couple weeks ago, just obliterated. What the advisor had done to the person was unconscionable, absolutely unconscionable. And I Googled the person's name. I didn't even go to broker check and found all kinds of bad things about this. Said the person Googled the name. Go to broker check always, though.
Yeah.
Or just go to our website, moneymatters.com, and watch the video, and it'll tell you exactly what to do.
That's right. Hey, Pat, we've got some workshops coming up that I think our listeners can benefit from.
Yeah, absolutely. We have them in Sacramento, San Francisco, and in the Denver area.
That's right. And if you've not been to one of our retirement transition workshops and you are within a couple years of retirement, it's worth a 1 hour and a 15-minute investment. It's a 75-minute workshop and a little travel time back and forth. It's an evening or Saturday morning investment of your time. it's complimentary. We don't charge anything for our workshops, but we're going to cover things like, how do you know how much retirement income you really need? Which will then equate to how much savings do you actually need? And how do you allocate those savings?
And where is it going to come from? And what risks do you have in the marketplace? And what are the tax ramifications of my retirement and my retirement transition? So this is our 7 personal decision points for a retirement transition workshop.
And they're the last week in January in the Sacramento area and the first week in February in the Bay Area and Denver areas. Just all you got to do is remember to go to moneymatters.com. Go to moneymatters.com. You'll get all the information and you can make a registration. And we would love to see you there. Right now, we got to take a quick break to pay the bills. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Back to one of the longest running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
And welcome back to the program, Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are sticking with us as we continue our fun with finance type thing.
It's been a rough month on me, Scott.
On you?
Yes.
Personally?
Yeah. So I just, you know, I turned 54 in November.
I was not invited to your birthday party, by the way.
Well, nor was anyone. Oh. Where was I?
By the way, my son missed his birthday party, his 19th birthday party. We were all there. He missed it.
Yeah, it's probably pretty shocking to a 19-year-old that mom and dad were having a birthday party for him and he missed it.
Family, my father's in from out of town, the whole thing.
That must have been crushing that he missed your father's
visit. He was supposed to be driving home from Tahoe.
And
dinner was at 6 o'clock. So we live approximately an hour and 45 minutes from where he was in Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
Right? Now we knew there was going to be some weather delays. Give yourself a little time, right? He left at like 3-something.
Oh, so he wasn't too concerned that he was going to miss.
Apparently not. He didn't miss the whole thing. Bad traffic, bad weather.
He missed his...
Took him 6 hours to get home. Missed the whole thing. We had cake. We had a restaurant. We had to bring out the cake with the candle. We sang happy birthday to him.
Oh, you went to a restaurant to do this?
Oh, yeah. No, we're in the back room at the restaurant.
Oh, he didn't care. You're 19. You can't hold that against him.
Oh, I didn't. So I did withheld his gift. Took that back.
So I turned 54, and I've been having knee issues for years and years, but I can ride a bike again, which I'm quite happy with. But I thought, I'm going to go back to snow skiing. And by the way, I'm not a great snow skier. I mean, I'll go up to the Black Diamonds, but the double black?
The Black Diamonds.
What? You're laughing at me.
Where's their double black diamond?
Aren't there double black diamonds?
Well, a cliff. Anyway,
I question the ratings
at most of the resorts. But
I'm not a good tree skier, but I just realized this. I told my wife just 2 days ago, I said, you know, I think my skiing days are over. I think that, and I just realized, man, this, I'm getting old. And the older I get, the more I actually think about. I've been saving for retirement since I got my first job out of college. First time 401k. But I've never really... I never really thought about distributions of the account for myself until this year.
You're 54. You have no plan on retiring.
Well, I know that, but you still go through the process. You still see it coming. Correct. And you know, when thousands and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of clients, probably not thousands, that I've worked with over the years, and we've talked about this, and from a financial advisor standpoint, it all of a sudden starts actually getting a little bit, I was always empathetic, but now actually as I'm getting further into it with myself, this whole concept of retirement, it's a little emotional. You realize, what the heck?
Well, you know, the interesting thing.
I should be sharing this with my therapist. I apologize.
You've got 3 hours every week.
I've got this. I buy them in this box. You know, you buy like car washes, like 20 at a time.
You can find the low cost.
I get the therapist.
Lowest cost therapist.
Yeah.
That's the way you want to find a good therapist, too.
Yeah.
What's that? How much do you pay an hour? That's ridiculous.
That's right. Yeah. Can I get a discount?
Well, what I find is you get the first one's usually free, so I just keep going to a new one.
And this one, because I beat this therapist on the price so much, I can't figure out why he always says that's not important. Like everything I say, he says that's not important.
So here's the interesting thing. So most of us think about money some in our lives. Some people think about money a lot. We are in the financial business.
Yes.
Right? So our vocation is such that we are constantly thinking about money, communicating with people about their finances, and looking at financial independence issues, retirement, that sort of thing. Right? That's now I personally, and I know you as well as Pat, I hope to never fully retire.
Yeah, I hope to be engaged in some form or fashion for the rest of my life. But
you also realize that for some people, it's just not possible, right?
Correct.
I mean, you see Warren Buffett's 80-some-odd, still active. Fortunately, we're not ditch diggers, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a physically demanding job. But it's possible that something could happen where we're just not quite as sharp as we once were, and it wouldn't be fair to those that we serve to continue doing what we're doing
That's
today,
correct.
Right?
So you've got to, even if you don't plan on doing it, you have to plan for it.
And the key, I think, really, is to be in a point that if your job ended tomorrow and you were forced to retire, could you make it work?
That is the question that you have to ask yourself.
Whether or not you want to retire, I know there's some that are just can't wait to retire. They hate their job. I get it. That's fine. Then you want to make sure you're prepared so that when you do retire, you can stay retired the rest of your life. But there's also some that like, I don't think I'll ever fully retire. I want to continue doing some sort of work. It's still important to be in a position where retirement is an option. And so, you know, one of the things, first part of the year, we don't give a pitch much for our firm, but, you know, meet with a Hanson McLean advisor if you haven't yet. We've got a great team of advisors.
And just go through these kind of issues. Even if you don't plan on retiring, prepare to retire.
Yeah. And so just meet with an advisor. We've got complimentary consultations. You'll find we're a low-key firm. We don't sell financial products, so we're not trying to sell you a product, and it's worth your time. So you can reach our firm at moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON during the week. Just Google Hanson McLean, of course, and you'll find us, and we encourage you to do so. So anyway, let's take some calls. If you want to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, that's 1-888-242-6766. And we're talking with Linda in Grass Valley. Linda, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes.
Hi, Linda.
How are you today?
We are wonderful.
You sound it. I've got a question for you. I will be 70, and I want to know how much should my portfolio hold in stocks versus treasury yep. bonds, that type of thing?
That's a great question.
That's a good question.
It really is. It sounds simple, but it's
not. I'm having a difficult time, and I just changed with an investor that I've been with for about 20 years, and I just got tired of him keeping over 60% of my account in cash.
In cash?
In cash.
Oh, what were you paying him for?
Well, that's what I said. I could do the same thing, put it under my pillow, and...
So, literally cash, not like fixed income or real...
And you would know the man. He's one of the top 100 in the state.
Oh, so let's start with you, because the right answer to the question isn't a formula. It has to do with you and your emotions and your experience.
And by the way, one of the formulas is you take 100 minus your age... And
that's the amount that you should have in equities, which means that you should, based on your age 70 and my quick math skills, you should, based on this
30,
formula, you should have 30-70. But that we don't follow that formula because it ignores the
a
fact that
things.
Everyone is different. So tell us about your investment experience. You've already
We have clients that are much older than you. That are very conservative, and we have clients much older than you that are very aggressive, like very aggressive.
Oh, I have a 78-year-old that's 90% equities, and the reason being is he's not investing for himself; he's investing for his children and his grandchildren.
He figures he's not going to spend all his money in his lifetime.
Correct. He knows he isn't.
Yeah.
So let's.
And that's my problem.
Oh.
I do not touch my investments.
How big is this little nest egg?
A million.
Okay.
A little over a million.
And you're not taking any distributions at all.
No, I'll have to starting. This year, because I'll turn 70 in May, but I'm going to turn around and put them right back into the trust.
Got it. And how much money of this is in IRAs and versus not IRAs?
Over 800,000 IRAs.
Got it.
Of that, I think 68 is a Roth.
Okay.
Because when we were doing it, Roth just started.
And
then the rest is in a trust, which is a little over 200,000.
Have you been converting to a Roth each year the last few years?
No, because I don't work. I can't.
Oh, yeah. You can convert. How much? Oh. What's your income?
My income is just Social Security and retirement.
How big is your retirement?
About, let's see, five times, about, let me calculate again, about 65,000.
Between the two of them.
Between everything. I get my husband's, mine, and his Social Security because his was larger, and I get it all. I have no taxes taken out of it. I pay estimated taxes.
Why?
Out of the trust for it.
Why?
Because I want the full amount. Being I'm not taking anything out of the trust at all.
Okay, so this new advisor, do you have a bypass trust or an AB trust?
It's an AB.
Got it. Okay. That's why.
Got it.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. You were right in firing.
The Roth conversion doesn't make sense. She's an unmarried woman at $65,000 a year. The Roth conversion doesn't make sense. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
The thing, if you aren't spending these dollars.
And everything is paid for. My house has been paid for 20 years.
And now, if you were sitting in our office, what we would do is we'd put a portfolio together and then we'd stress test it for you. And what that stress test means is, if the market falls by 20%, this is what we could possibly expect your portfolio to perform.
Or if we had another financial crisis, or let's say you had this portfolio during that last financial crisis.
This is how it would have performed, approximately how it would have performed.
And part of this is to get to a point where you have a good understanding of what, because the 60% or 30%, that doesn't mean anything, right?
Right.
What we're talking about is $1 million. How much can that $1 million fall in value?
And how will you react? Yes. So if the market, if your portfolio is off 15%, 15% sounds pretty benign, but it's
150,000.
So how would you respond? Would you stay invested?
I wouldn't like it.
Would you stay
invested? No one's going to like that.
Would you stay invested?
Well, that's what this new gentleman is telling me. Yeah. You know, you have been way too conservative. You're not even keeping up with inflation.
The question is, would you stay invested? If your portfolio was down $150,000 in a six-month period, would you?
I think you have to, because it fluctuates that much.
There you go.
You would have to. You don't pull out when it's low. You pull out when it's high.
There you go. All right. So you're answering the questions for yourself. So, ask.
I don't know if there's a right or there's
now,
no.
Would I like it? No.
Of course.
Would I be calling? Yes.
Oh, you would call. which is fine. That's what you pay the advisor for.
Yeah.
There's no perfect answer.
Yeah, I'd go 50-50.
What percentage did you have in stocks up until now?
Some of that was bonds. I'd have to look at the wheel.
Well, less than 30%.
Sure. Huh?
Less than 30%.
Probably. Yeah,
I would
probably
go
28 or something.
I might do 60-40. I might.
60 stocks, 40.
Maybe. Yeah, I might.
Like treasuries? Because bonds aren't doing anything.
Well, treasuries are doing even. I mean, I'd have a diversified. I wouldn't just pick. I personally wouldn't say stick 60% in the total stock market index and 40% in the treasuries.
Yeah,
that's correct.
I'd have a diversified fixed income portfolio as well. I have a variety of different type of fixed income.
And as long as you understood the downside, right? Because the upside always takes care of itself. The upside always takes care of itself.
Yeah, everyone likes the upside.
Yeah, no one could. I've been doing this for 25 plus years. I have never received a single phone call where someone called and said they were making too much money.
We did have a call last, we didn't come to you, but to an advisor. And someone called and said, my account was up this much. I think I may be too aggressively invested.
Oh.
So we've had one.
Oh. And they want to rebalance.
We do that on an ongoing basis anyway. So in your portfolio, I'd go between 50 and 60% in equities.
And you could always say, Linda, so it took you 20 years to get here, right? You could always say, over the next 5 years, I'm going to slowly ratchet up. So, you know, I'm in whatever percentage today. If my goal is to get to 60%, if I'm in 40% today, I'm going to bump it up a bit each year over the next 5 years. That's a strategy. There's no perfect strategy, right? These are just designed to reduce some risk and shock to you.
So your current advisor to build a stress test. In fact, we have it on our portfolio. If your current advisor actually doesn't have the ability, have them go to our website and
Don't we have it still up there?
No, they can't actually use the tool.
Oh, that's correct. You have to send us the portfolio, and then we build it.
We're not just going to give away our tools.
Give it away.
Yeah. All right. Well, we appreciate the call, Linda. Great work.
Great work. I have another real quick question. All right. If you put these portfolios together, I have a funny feeling when he did them, he had like low risk, middle risk, high risk, that kind of thing. And I think he took people and just like questioned them, what, you know, like I didn't want a lot of risk, but I wanted some movement, right?
Uh-huh.
I think he put like maybe 100 or 200 in that. So when he changed one of us, he changed all of us. Do you do your accounts that way, or do you actually physically do each account individually?
We have, I don't know, 40 or 50 different model portfolios.
Yeah.
And then that we have seven of these. I don't know what percentage have some customization to it.
There's
almost
some,
half or something.
And there's 7,000 individuals. So over, something like
that. But we have very robust technology that monitors each portfolio individual.
Answer to the question is no, we don't do it like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the way you describe
it. And you do have programs or whatever that help you with what's going on?
Oh, yeah. Actually, we have people that sit in rooms and stare at screens.
Lots of screens.
Oh, okay.
But not that we can predict. Okay, not that we can predict the markets.
I don't know how you would do this today. This market is so crazy. I don't know how you've done it the last 5 years.
Oh, it's you.
It's always crazy.
There is a heavy use of technology in order to make it efficient.
Yeah.
So appreciate the call.
The markets have always been
okay.
Crazy.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck,
bye-bye.
Linda. And she's a good point of just because you have an advisor, maybe your advisor is not doing the right job for you.
And
you don't owe the advisor anything.
No.
Her advisor
wasn't listening to her. No.
Again, risk tolerance is one portion, but it's also based upon when you're going to need the money.
What the objectives of the dollars are.
So there's this whole concept, well, as you get older, you're going to need the money. Well, that's true for most of us, right? As we get older, we're going to take our savings and convert it into some retirement income. But for some who have excess or for whatever reason, they don't need the money or even desire the money.
How many clients have you had where you said, look, it's not going to make a difference. I can aggressively invest this.
That's why I've seen some wealthy clients who say,
No risk.
I don't want any risk. Why do I need to take risk? I don't need to take risk, so I don't want any risk. I don't like the fluctuations. I'm not going to take it.
And then you see wealthy clients that have phenomenal amounts because they know that if the market pulls back,
doesn't matter.
That historically it's always come back and that they're going to be fine.
Correct. Yeah.
So the right portfolio is the one you'll stay invested in during the downturn. That's the right portfolio.
One you'll stay invested in.
During the downturn.
Absolutely.
That's the right portfolio. So I don't know what, it's not based on your age.
Nope.
It's based on your personality and how you react to external.
And then the timing thing with when you need the money, look, if you need the money within 5 years, well, you don't have the luxury of time on your side to allow things to recover. That's why you wouldn't want
100%
shorter term money in volatile investments.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, Pat. One of the questions we get often, probably one of the most common questions from people is should you invest money on a regular basis or pay off the mortgage? And for many people, the idea of having your home paid it's kind of an American tradition, right? It's like, years ago, they used to have, people would have parties to burn the mortgage deed, right?
It was I've never witnessed that. I've heard that.
I've heard about
it,
those parties.
And people talk about it, but I've actually never been invited to one.
Reminds me of a total side story.
Okay, let's go.
So when I was in fifth grade.
Oh, no.
No, it's an interesting story. My family decided to move. My parents had divorced, remarried. There were now six kids in one house. And we were like,
they didn't remarry each other.
No, so
they divorced.
Six kids in one house. And my family, my mother and stepfather decided to buy like this ranch thing up north of Bakersfield in the middle of nowhere, or citrus groves and whatnot. And so with that, there's a lot of work. I think they thought it'd be good for the kids to work, which there are plenty of chores. But anyway, I remember one of the first things they had all this brush that they had gathered, and there's this huge pile, and they were going to have a bonfire to burn off this pile of stuff. And so the family invited some other friends over with had kids, and we were going to have like a weenie roast with the bonfire.
This doesn't sound safe.
Now, I'm bringing this up because they were talking about burning the
mortgage paper.
They light this thing. Pat, the flames were 80 feet in the air. I mean, the thing was massive. You couldn't get within 100 yards of this fire.
Okay.
And it burned, everything burned up like in about 6 minutes. You
know, no weenie roast?
No weenie roast. It was amazing. It was like,
they weren't
side playing. Story.
So the question is, should you pay off your mortgage?
I know that had nothing to do with finances.
But, understand, but thank you for sharing your youth. So the pay off your mortgage. There's two rules of thought on this. One is you have a lot less risk in your retirement, and emotionally you'll feel better if you go into retirement without a mortgage. And we know that from experience.
That's right.
We know that from experience. Clients that actually retire without a mortgage have kind of a buffer, most emotionally from the markets and financially from the markets, because they're not relying on a stream of income to pay off them their mortgage. So if you have a defined benefit pension plan that's paying you on a monthly basis, it makes it a little bit easier to have a mortgage. But by and large, we prefer that our clients not have a mortgage when they retire. We would prefer that, because you know the outcome with a mortgage, you don't always know the outcome with an investment. So they're not,
well, not only that. So sometimes I hear people say, well, look, they'll say, Scott, my mortgage is 4 or 4.5%. I can earn better than that. You may be able to.
Sometimes, but if you have bonds in your portfolio, my guess is that there's a large portion of your portfolio that is underperforming that.
Not only that, if you look at investor behavior, I mean, there's studies show how the typical investor does. They don't get market returns because they tend to make poor choices. They move out of the wrong things at the right time, or move
out of the
whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Things at the wrong time.
They make poor choices.
Yes. And
the typical investor.
An investment in your home. So we like clients that sometimes 5, 6, 7 years before retirement to accelerate their payments on their mortgages so that they retire mortgage free. Now, in saying that, if you get to retirement and you haven't paid off your mortgage, sometimes it makes sense to get the longest mortgage possible.
I remember years ago, I was working with a client. I think they were late 60s. Yeah. And their home, they're paying down their home because they wanted to have their home paid off. It was going to be paid off by the time he was 77, I believe, right?
Perfect. Perfect. They get their home paid off.
You were talking earlier that you can't ski anymore because your knee, right? As you get older, think you have.
I'm being sarcastic.
I know you are. So, and they were skimping on things so that their home would be paid off in like 8 years.
So their kids could inherit more.
Right. So we had this discussion. And I said, what about if we can have this so your mortgage, what if we just forgot about paying off your home and had the smallest mortgage payment as possible? So you barely even noticed it. And that's essentially what we did.
And then you had more net spendable income in retirement. So what's the point if you're paying $2,000 on a mortgage a month until you're 77, and then on your 78th birthday, you have an extra $2,000 a month to spend?
You might not make it.
Not only that, you might not be able to enjoy it once you get the $2,000 a month, let alone live to actually see the day.
Yeah, the whole thing, this retirement planning, it's about balancing, right? We don't know. The future is unknown. We're all going to die. We just don't know when. Some of us might get sick for many years before we die. We don't know that either.
Some of us, our spouse may get sick or die, and it changes the whole plan altogether. So
while you're working, our opinion, our advice, which we strongly believe in, is to work to get that home paid off. If you're 50 years old, you plan on retiring at 65, make payments so that thing will be paid off on your 65th birthday, right? So do everything in your power to get that thing paid off. Once you are retired, then structure it in such a manner so your mortgage payment as low as absolutely possible. And there are times even in later in life for a reverse mortgage. That's a different topic entirely. But it just makes things easier. But you don't want to forego retirement savings. So assuming you're saving 10%, I mean, as a general rule, you got to have 10% going to retirement as a minimum.
Yeah.
And then get working on getting the home paid off. Yeah. I know there's a lot to be.
So people ask, should I invest or pay down my mortgage? And the question is, Yes.
And probably frankly, both. That's where a good financial advisor comes in.
Probably both. And this is a, when we do our
workshop. A good
workshop,
certified financial planner, I would strongly recommend to meet with a good advisor if you have not, just to kind of look through what makes the most sense for you.
And you talk about this in your book, and we talk about it in our workshop, The 7 Personal Decision Points for Retirement Transition.
Yes.
We talk about this subject. We talk about the biggest subject, which is how much money do I need to retire? That is the question that we, the first question we
How much
get.
Do I need?
How much money do I need? You'll probably ask yourself that question.
How much money do I need?
How much money do I need to retire? How much money do you, I need to
That's
retire?
The first thing we just, we look at some ways to come up with that number because every situation is different.
Yeah.
We're all different people. So our workshop, we cover that as well as ways to reduce some expenses, ways to look at income streams in retirement with your investment portfolio.
Does it make sense for you to pay off your mortgage? What are your taxes
Talk
look
about
like?
Those.
Estate planning.
So our workshop's coming up. We mentioned this early in the program. We're going to give a shameless plug for them again because we do think they're worthwhile, which is why we host these.
Yeah, and they are our workshops, so we put some time and energy in this.
Yeah, so the workshops are conducted in the Sacramento area Wednesday, January 25th and Thursday, January 26th at 7 p.m. in the evening. Then again that Saturday at 11 o'clock on the 28th. So last weekend in January in Sacramento, in the Bay Area and in Denver, Wednesday the 1st, that evening, Thursday the 2nd, that evening, February the 4th, mid-morning workshop. All the details, all the information you can find at moneymatters.com where you can go and register for the workshop. But we've done, you know, Pat, we've done thousands of workshops over the years,
yes.
I would say.
Some for large corporations.
And everywhere in between. And we've got a lot of experience. They're fun workshops. I've yet to have anyone tell me that was a waste of their time.
Good Q&A at the after. 75 minutes long, unless you want to stay longer and ask questions.
Yeah. Moneymatters.com. You'll get all the details. We look forward to seeing you there. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.